the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
Look, we're not going to beat around the bush. It's the battle of the undefeateds this week, Michigan, Michigan State. So we have other things to get to before we get to that. But, you know, if you stay with us long enough, we're going to talk about it. And we've got a little interesting kind of segment to play with here. Russ kind of helped me name it. We're going to call it How Lost in the Sauce is Justin? Because we think I want to see how honest he can be about his Spartans. So we're going to get to that. Before we do, I'll bring in my fellow U of M fan, the stat man, Russ Ivanek.
Go blue.
Yep. Go blue, my friend. That's all you need to say. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm happy on this highway to this matchup. We're at exit 10:30. It's time to go, and it's all I can think about all week.
Absolutely. There you go. And the other side of the fence, Sergeant Salty, the Spartan, Justin Marcus.
Welcome to the woodshed, mother effer. Let's go. Let's go. It's here. It's here. This bracelet,
all right.
This bracelet ain't coming off. This is the charm. It's here.
I don't think you've helped your case.
So much.
The bracelet?
Yeah, I don't think you did anything.
My daughter made this for me, you jerk.
Oh, that's fine. It looks great. I'm sure different color palette or color scheme next time would be great, but hey, it works for you. Before we get to that game, I want to lead off with a little topic. We're going to talk NFL. We're going to talk Lions. But I have a little fun kind of game segment for us to play here. The title of it is I apologize to Mr. Tannehill. And the reason I say that is I watched a little bit of the Tennessee Titans Kansas City game the other day, waiting for our Lions game to start at 4:00. And while I was watching it, they showed a very interesting stat line that kind of put me from very much on the fence about Ryan Tannehill and thinking that he might be the weak link of that offense to realizing this man might be the most underrated person on that offense. At one point, Ryan Tannehill was 11 of 11 for 172 yards and a touchdown. And we weren't even at halftime yet. So, one, my apologies to Mr. Tannehill for anything I've ever said to you to as a quarterback. But I want to ask you both, and Jay, I'll let you go first here because I know how much you love thinking on your feet. Can you name a guy, he can even be retired or active right now in any of these sports, that maybe didn't get the respect he deserved because of where he played or someone he played with? And I have a really good one that I want to get to, but before I want to hear what you guys want to say because I want to see if either of you get on the same one as me.
Well, off the top of the dome, just because I disrespect this man to this day if we talk about him, probably Chris Osgood. And that's just keeping it local, too. I think a lot of people dog on him because of how stacked that Wings team was, that he was still our goalie. Like, he still did things for this team. Football-wise, you probably got it nailed with Tannehill. Just because, I mean, he's got Derrick Henry. He's got a stud weapon that gives him opportunities to actually thrive. So, but off the top of the head, I'm going Osgood because Osgood's not good was my favorite chant for like 5 years.
I think with Tannehill, you look at, I think when you look at Tannehill, you look at Derrick Henry, Julio Jones, AJ Brown. There are so many other guys on this team that you wonder, like, how does Tannehill get lost in the shuffle? And that's kind of why, because there are so many other guys that you think of before him.
That's fair. Russ, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm struggling to think of another one because you took my Osgood layup. Tannehill is, he's essentially what, and I warned you guys earlier, it's all I can think about, but Tannehill is what Harbaugh wants McNamara to be. Efficient, not the focus, gets the job done without being flashy and without anyone really noticing he's there. Now you see the difference in these two offenses in that the Titans are unstoppable because Tannehill's doing it. He is the if you're going to call a quarterback a game manager, calling Tannehill a game manager is the highest compliment you can give him right now. He's not flashy. He is managing the game perfectly. It's the opposite of the squeaky wheel gets the oil. He ain't squeaking. He's making everything else turn. I'm struggling to find somebody else that would be as underappreciated, because I still don't even know that he's a top 10 quarterback in pure talent, but he's at least a top 5 in fit. There's not many quarterbacks that fit that scheme and that personnel quite as well as he does.
The one for me, and I thought this would be a hot button topic, or just because of everything going on around this team right now, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Someone course correct me on this, but I feel like another guy who, don't get me wrong, he's still, when they were both in their prime, not to say they're out of their prime, they were probably both top 10 players. I'm gonna go with on the Blackhawks, I'm gonna go with Taze. I feel like he always got a little overshadowed by the fact that he was playing next to Patrick Kane for almost his entire career.
Yeah, I mean, they had Andrew Shaw and Johnny Oduya and John Merson and Keith, and they had a lot of big names, especially when they were winning cups, that Taves kind of just is in the middle of it all. So, you know, it's like Chris Bosh with the Heat. Someone had to be third best player on that team, and Chris Bosh probably is underappreciated as well.
That's fair.
In that same vein, going with Red Wings rivals, Evgeny Malkin doesn't get the love that he's a number one center, and he's playing second line center on this team, and that's probably why they're so successful, because you got two of them. Sid's good, right? Sid's real good, we know. But Gino doesn't really get a lot of love.
That's fair.
Probably because he's hurt.
No,
yes,
not at all.
Long-term IR.
It was just that thing of, I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm like, you always knew the Tannehill had skill because he's playing on an NFL team and a playoff caliber NFL team. So to be that quarterback, you have to be able to be effective in this offense. So to see what he was doing, I was like, you know, this guy really doesn't get the same respect as he probably should. And it's just a weird thing to think of, because obviously when you're watching that game, Derrick Henry's the first thing you're thinking of.
And then the second thing, and then the third thing.
And then third thing. And it could very well be the fourth thing. So it is what it is. Moving on, let's talk about our Lions. I think the title says it all. Why was that so close? Lions fall 28-19 to the LA Rams, the Matt Stafford run LA Rams. And I think we're going to circle back to Stafford a little later on to find out how everybody did for Sergeant Salty's Bet of the Week. So we won't go too far into it, but just to give you a brief recap, Jared Goff, 22 of 36, 268, one touchdown, two interceptions. Williams was the leading rusher, 12 carries, 57 yards, followed by Swift, 13 carries, 48 yards. Leading receiver, Mighty Mouse, Raymond, six catches, 115 yards. TJ Hockenson finishes with six catches for 48 yards. Guys, when you look at this, I think you could talk about what the offense did hanging with that Rams offense for so long. But I think the first thing that jumps out is just the willingness to try risky things at risky points in this game to make sure that you stayed in it. Look, we had an onside kick. We had two fake punts. This was a team that I think, you know, Campbell looked at it and said, we got nothing to lose here, so let's do what we can to win. And you know what? A couple times they caught McVay off guard, and McVay even said at the halftime, you know, cheers to them for having the guts to do it and try to pull it off and being able to pull it off. So, Russ, when you look at this, look, it's still 0-7. It's still a loss. But to me, I see it as, one, willingness to do whatever they can to win, but two, it's showing that Campbell is – quietly figuring out what works and what doesn't with this team. This is another game where the Lions were in it almost all the way till the end.
Apparently the trick is all gas, no brakes, all caffeine, no chill. I subscribe more of the closeness of the game to Dan Campbell's guts than I do the offense actually hanging with LA at all. They scored on four of their first five drives, right? All five, that's the entire first half of the game. Four out of the five, they scored. One punt on the other one. That's when we saw the onside kick. That's when we saw the first fake punt. The problem is, three of those were field goals. That was the offense coming up short. Two of them over 40 yards. You're putting your players in the position to succeed. And Dan Campbell, for all the losses he's accumulated, he's done that very well. He lets the players go and the game is decided by them, which in some senses is the best you can ask for a coach. But to get 3 field goals out of 4 drives that get points, you're leaving points on the board, and you see it immediately. LA scored on all 3 of their drives in the first half, and it was a 1-point game at half, and they had done half the effort the Lions had to get there. So it's, look, I love it. I love the aggression. I love him going, hey, it's on you guys. You guys get to win or lose. But this offense has got a long ways to go still. You can't leave so many points on the board when you're pulling out all the stops as it is.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, salty. I have a different perspective from it. I'm not doing it just to have an opposing view. It's legitimately how I felt when I watched this game. That, like, every trick play and every fake this, that, and the other, it was an act of desperation. And I found it, like, very unflattering. I understand that that was them emptying the tank, and this is them trying to do whatever they can to win, and what do we have to lose? Like, that might be cute for 0-6, 0-7 Detroit Lions, whatever they're at now, but it's like, that's not an identity. To me, that's not a game plan. Like, that's not something that's sustainable, that you can come out every single week and do that crazy shit to try to win. Like, I see Kansas City, and they don't care about defense. They're just going to go, right? And they're going to try to score as much. They have the league's worst defense, right? The Ravens are going to always be a run-heavy team. Titans are always going to lean on Henry. Green Bay, as long as they have Rodgers, which this is probably the end of this, but they're always going to sling the ball and be in every game. I don't find it cute at all. I don't want that to be our identity, that it's just trick play city. And, oh, we're going to catch you off guard and try to get points. I don't think it's sustainable. It's cute for one game, but like it seemed desperate to me. I just laughed at it. Maybe I'm jaded, but I really hated it.
Mr. Spartan fan, if I could reference back one Mr. Mark D'Antonio, wasn't he very well known for pulling these out at key times? He was really good at it, but
I think, all right, so hang on. The Philly special, right? Okay. That's an appropriate use. It's a one-off. We still have an identity, and this is what we're trying to do to win. When we come out the gate, like, gangbusters doing all kinds of stuff, that's what I don't like. Because that's not, like, situationally catching an opponent off guard. That's just, here, let me just throw everything at you and see what sticks.
But it's not like I don't think they've onside kicked, besides desperation at the end of the game, the entire season. This is the first time they came right out of the gate with it, and they caught LA off guard. It was 13-3.
Catching them off guard, yeah. But, like, just I thought it was, like, very desperate. It's like going on a first date and being like, I'm going to marry you immediately. Like, it's like, whoa, slow down. Let's get there first.
But if you're 0-7 or 0-6 before this game, shouldn't you be desperate?
I guess.
Aren't you desperate?
I guess.
The year before we got Stafford.
Two things I want to.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead. You're in the middle of it. Go ahead.
Okay, I was just saying, the year before we got Stafford, this was a winless team. The year after we lost Stafford, this looks like a winless team. You can't let that poetry happen. You cannot. It will be talked about forever. This will be the curse of Bobby Lane for the next 50 years. Yeah. Can't do it. Be desperate.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Two things I'd like to point out. One, Jay, I find that when you're talking, that your example for non-desperate but doing what they need to do is a 3-4 Kansas City team.
Yeah,
that
not good.
Is likely not even like the favorite to win their division right now. But two, I would like to ask you a question, because you're talking about this desperation, you're talking about all that. If this was a 28-19, everything's done the same. The plays are all the same. If this was a 28-19 win for the Lions, would you still be calling those acts of desperation or doing whatever it took to get a W?
It would still be desperation because, again, I don't think it's sustainable. I want this team to have an identity, and it might work on some weekends, and it's great. But then what do you fall back on to win, like, non-aggressively, if you will, if non-trick play, non-fake this, non, like,
well.
I'm being picky.
You are being picky. But what I'm saying is, like, this isn't like them saying, oh, we won with that. We're fake punting every week, because that would never work. But what it is saying is, we just did 3 plays that any other season or any other game would be a risky thing, but they worked in this situation. So over the course of the season, you find things that you can consistently pull off in rare moments, whether it is an end around, a fake punt, an onside kick, a flea flicker, just something that's going to give you the advantage that you know you can execute if you get the right people in the situation. I'm not saying that because they get a win out of that every week Jack Fox has to throw the ball on a punt. I'm not saying that even remotely, but what I am saying is you have to find what, you're for it. Yeah, you're for it.
All Jack Fox.
You have to
day.
Find what works and make it work. So it's just where I sit. Was it a have nothing to lose situation? Absolutely. And you lost. So really you gained nothing from it. You lost the game anyway. But if this turned out to be a victory, whether it's a 28-19 win or whether it's legitimately a like 21-19 win for the Lions, if those three plays were crucial in that win, I don't see it as desperation. I see it as exactly what it needs to be. A team who is down on their luck and trying to figure this out, doing every single thing they can to win, not leaving a single question mark on the board.
I understand what you're trying to say. I know you have an optimistic lens of this is good momentum. For me, you put lipstick on a pig, it's still a fucking pig. I can't. I love bacon too. I'm not talking about dietary issues. I'm just talking about this team's ongoing success. The identity of the Detroit Lions, I know who they still are. And I have a problem buying in. I'd rather have a successful third down than have a Jack Fox throw on fourth.
Well, of course you don't want to have to get to the point where you have to do a fake punt, but you're going to be because this is a bad team.
I want them to be better. I know.
We all do.
We can agree on that. It was too cheeky for me. I didn't enjoy it. I watched it. I'm like, ugh, great. I don't know. I'm jaded, man.
All right. It's fair. Yeah, it's fair. Before we get over to the predictions for this upcoming week against the Philadelphia Eagles, I do want to ask you both a question. Like I said, we got a couple curveballs coming your way in this episode, but they're nothing I don't think any of you can handle. If I asked you guys, and we don't need the full list, but I'm just asking in perspective. If I asked you guys to put together that list of top 10 wide receivers in this league, where does Cooper Kupp sit right now?
Ooh.
Just for perspective on this, Cooper Kupp, 10 catches, 156 yards and 2 touchdowns. Longest reception was 60 yards on Sunday.
Behind Jamar Chase and ahead of Jarvis Landry? I don't know.
Definitely ahead of of Landry, I'll tell you that much.
Well, I mean, look.
Maybe top 10. You can maybe.
You could put Devontae Adams in there. You know Hopkins is in there. You know Diggs. Guys like that. So you know he's not a top 5 wide receiver in this league because that list fills up very fast. DK Metcalf, guys like that. But guy is producing week in and week out, and it's just that thing of is he quietly moving in? I mean, look, he's in the 2021, he's first in receptions, first in yards, and oh, by the way, first in touchdowns. The only thing he's not first in the league in right now is average at 14.4, where he's 28th. So he's literally the best receiver when it comes to receptions, yards, and touchdowns. I mean, if you can't tell me this guy doesn't crack a top list right now, I think I have to question your way of doing math.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to find ways to knock on him. I mean, his catch rate's a little low compared to some of like Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, but that's nitpicking. Mm-hmm. I'll say he's easily having a top 5 production this season, easily. Right? I can't even find a reason to argue against that. Is there a difference between production and skill? I say yes. Depends on your opinion on that, you say he's a top 5 wide receiver, but you're not doing your due diligence if you get past the top 10 and you haven't at least mentioned him.
I would like to point out, though, the one thing where I go against, and I don't disagree with anything you just said, Russ, except for the only thing is when you mentioned those two guys you mentioned, Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill,
mm-hmm.
they're it for their team when it comes to the receiving core. Whereas with LA, you have Woods, who's a very good receiver as well, and almost kind of falls by the wayside for what Cooper Kupp did on Sunday, not to take him away from anything. What I'm just saying is that's where I get it even more is I think most people, if I just laid out the roster to you, you wouldn't pick Cooper Kupp as the number one receiver on that team. But right now he is, but he's also got other people that are right there with him that are also producing. Whereas Aaron, it's almost a guarantee. If Aaron Rodgers has three touchdowns in a game, two of them were Devontae Adams, and the third one was a throw to the running back out of the flat.
It's probably Aaron Jones, yeah. Yeah, I mean, as far as complimentary receiving talent, he definitely has more. I think it's worth mentioning, though, he is far and away leading the league in targets, though. He has eight more targets than Devontae Adams, who's in second place. That's a game's worth of targets, almost.
Thanks, Stafford.
Yeah.
For creating this discussion. Kind of, I bet when the year's over, like when we get to the end of the season, I bet Cooper Kupp's got a whole new outlook on life because of Stafford.
Well, but I also think of the receivers over the years that have been tied to Stafford that got second life because of Matt Stafford. I'm not taking anything away from him. Tate was kind of thought as is not really a premier guy after leaving Seattle. He comes here and becomes one of the top receivers in the league consistently. Stafford is that guy where if you're going to catch the ball, he's not biased. He'll throw anyone the ball that's going to catch it. And that's partly because he was on the Lions where if anybody caught the ball, it meant productivity and not dying. So I give him that. I mean, he turned I'm not taking anything away from the talent, but you look at Kenny Golladay leaves New York or leaves Detroit and immediately doesn't play half of his season. He had injury problems, but even when he's on the field, he doesn't look like the same guy. It just shows you how much better Matt Stafford can make people look. That being said, Cooper Kupp was doing this before Matt Stafford got to LA. And that's why I'm saying, I think he's not top five. I can't put him there, but what I can say is he makes a very strong case to be in the middle of that second five for a top 10 receiver in this league.
I'd agree with that.
And sir, but that was a perfect little warm up. Let's do our predictions real quick, but keep that same feeling of comparing players. Cause we're going to do it here in a minute. Right after we get through this. Predictions. Philadelphia is a 56.8% favorite to win this game. The over-under sits, or the spread sits at 3.5, and the over-under is 48. So it gives you all a perspective. These are two not good teams, 2-5 Philadelphia Eagles, 0-7 Detroit Lions. If the Lions were ever going to steal one, you would think this would be the one to steal. That being said, they are going up against Jalen Hurts, 148 to 242 for 1,700 yards, 10 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. Kind of like the Lions, not really much of a running game. Jalen Hurts is actually their leading rusher with 361 rushes on 66 carries. Devontae Smith, rookie, big name right now, 32 catches, 406 yards, and 1 touchdown to Swift's 42 catches, 391 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So, look, these are two offenses that are doing anything they can to pile up stats and not doing it very well. So Russ, when you look at this, which way are you leaning?
I said last week, I'm not going to take the Lions to win a game until they win a game. And then that's not changing here because I've been hurt too much. I'm just hoping for Halloween, they go as a competent team that doesn't turn over the ball. If they game plan like they did against Lamar Jackson, and just try to limit Philly in that same way, then the offense just has to get to 24 points and they will win this game. 24. That's all you need. However, they haven't gotten to 24 since week one. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to try something new there. I got a 24-20 loss. Philly pulling it out on the road, but the game plan is there, right? Do exactly what you did against Lamar and just don't turn over the ball. You got to stop kicking so many field goals. Convert one more time. It's that close, I think. Just one more conversion.
It's fair. Jay.
So this might be the second time today that Russ and I are just literally riding the same wavelength. Earlier today, him and I both had a fantasy bid of $51 for Cincinnati's defense. So,
waiver priority.
Now in my head, I'm going to go, all right, 51, 52.
Up in perfect. Got you where I want you.
But in terms of what we're thinking in the score, I've got this as a 24-21 loss. So it's pretty damn close to what Russ was predicting there. I was tickled with the fact that the Eagles' leading rusher is their quarterback and the Lions' leading receiver is their running back. So that kind of tells you how balanced both these teams really aren't. I don't see how we come off of Campbell crying and then we go to LA and everyone's dabbing up Stafford at the end of the game. I love you, man. You're so great. Congrats on 200. Like, they're all up in his feelings. And then we got to come home. I think it's at home. I don't know. We got to go play the Eagles somewhere. It doesn't matter. Thank you. I just feel like there's going to be that emotional drop off. Like, I don't see us getting up and getting at it at this game. So give me a 24-21 loss. It'll be close because the Eagles blow, but there's no victory before the bye.
Okay. I'm looking at one stat here, and that one stat is why I wholeheartedly agree with Russ. 66 carries for 361 yards. And that is Jalen Hurts' stats rushing this year, which tells me one of two things. One, either this offensive line is so bad that plays are breaking down and he has to scramble for his life, or two, Jalen Hurts still trusts his legs a little more than he trusts his arm. That to me sounds a lot like, you got it, whatever the fucking Ravens quarterback name is. That name was sitting right here. Thank you. That name was right here, and I almost just said Jamal Lewis because it was sitting right here, and it just went right out my head as soon as I said Jalen Hurts.
The 2000 Baltimore Ravens say hi. What's up?
At least I was with the Ravens. I could have gone to another team altogether. I stuck with the Ravens. I stayed in the Maryland vicinity. He still trusts his legs a little more than he trusts his arm. So I the Alabama connection from quarterback to receiver, it's a nice touch. But I just think it's that you're getting that. You are getting a probably less physically gifted version of Lamar Jackson this week. You know the game plan. Stick to it and execute it and realize if we get to the fourth quarter and they have third or fourth and 19 – just put everybody back. Don't need to give them the first down and for the 67-yard field goal. Let's learn from that mistake. So that being said, I have the exact same score as Justin, 24-21, but I have no more lost record for the Lions. 1-7 Lions after this week. I think they execute the game plan right. But like we said, these are not good teams. This isn't going to be a one-sided, you know, Rudy moment where we come out of nowhere for a 48-0 blowout. It's not going to happen. This is going to be close till the end. But I also think this is a good opportunity for Jared Goff to prove his merit. Get that ball with 2 or 3 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. Drive it down the field. If we win by a field goal, hey, that's fine. A win is a win. But find a way to have that ball last in the game with a chance to win and go get the win. 24-21, Lions go 1-7. And we get a tiny little speck of hope that should mean absolutely nothing to anyone here. So, look, I'm with you both. It's so easy to bet against the Lions right now that it's very hard to bet for the Lions. I completely agree with that. Moving on, it is that time. We held off as long as we could, but it's time to talk about the undefeateds. And before we do that, we're going to give our predictions. We're going to give our breakdowns. But this is where I said we're going to see how deep in the sauce Justin Marcus is. And how we're going to do that is we are going to go not fully position by position, but pretty close. And we're going to, like the papers do, you're going to pick who wins in the matchup. Okay? We'll get it out of the way quick. I don't think anyone's going to dispute this. First position is obviously quarterback. Okay? You got Cade McNamara, you got Thorne. I don't think anybody here is going to disagree that if you battle those two quarterbacks right now with how they're playing, it's Thorne.
Agree.
Yep, Thorne. It's a nod. It's a nod on radio. That always works.
I said it as well.
Jay?
I don't need to say it. That's easy.
Yeah. We're going 11 for 11. What do you mean?
Let me get my Paul Bunyan stance right quick.
All right, there we go. Moving over, this is the one that I think could potentially hold the most debate. It really could. Running back. You have Walker, who's a Heisman candidate and tearing it up, or you have the double-headed monster with Corum and Haskins. So, Jay, I'll let you go first here. See how deep you are on the sauce. Who has the better opportunity at the running back position?
This is a sauceless take. It's Kenneth Walker III. It's easily Kenneth Walker III. We don't need that second running back to have some dual system. We take Elijah Collins or whoever the hell it is, and we put him out as a tight end half the time. So I'm not. This is Kenneth Walker. I understand the big play takes away from a lot of the analysis because it's inflation of numbers. But Kenneth Walker finds his opportunities for him and does that on his own. That O-line can be shaky, but he moves. Like that is talent making decisions. And we'll show you on Saturday, but it's Kenneth Walker in my opinion. That's a sauceless take.
Yeah, that's sauceless, like a dripping barbecue wing is sauceless. Get out of here.
No sauce.
Is Kenneth Walker the best of him, Corum, and Haskins? Yes, he is the most talented running back of the group. That does not mean that Michigan State has the advantage in running backs, however. Football, I don't know if you guys have heard this, football is a brutal sport. People get hurt real bad every single day. So the drop-off, if anything should happen to Walker or if Michigan can find a way to shut down Haskins' skills, is way more significant than if that happens to either one of the Michigan running backs, and that's by design. You can't run 46 times on average a game and have one guy do it. You need both of them to keep them fresh. So they're both have less miles on their tires than Kenneth Walker does. So if this is a rainy day, like it's projected, it might be kind of cold. We get the fall weather coming in. Asking him to carry the ball 30 times is a lot. Asking two different guys to carry the ball 17 times each and go warm up on the sidelines in between, much better chance for higher volume. There's a reason Michigan averages more yards per carry, more yards per game, and more rushing touchdowns per game, because the attack overall is better than the single player on the other side.
I'm gonna quickly rebuttal real quick. I'm gonna quickly one thing. Michigan wants to run the ball more than they want to throw it, evidently, and it's a time of possession. It's a time of possession battle. So yeah, they do go for the grind it out. We got the dual backs. We have health to our benefit. You know, we've got a solid running back. You got two great running backs. We'll see what works. But you guys go for the time of possession attack on that. So I guess that is a formula, not one I would subscribe to.
What's interesting on the time of possession battle there, Michigan and Michigan State almost have exactly the same points per play metric.
Oh, really?
Almost identical. It's down to the 100th place that it's the exact same number. So
we're doing a math podcast today.
Yes,
math last week. I gotta do math.
The title of the show is Math Class with Mr. Ivanak. I want to give you a little
0.54 and 0.53. So it's actually not a lot of grinded out, lots of plays to go. You know, three, four plays to get a first down. Both teams do about the same overall.
I want to give you a little perspective as to something that I think is being overlooked here. And this is nothing to do with the talent. This man is a very talented football player, but let me give you some perspective. Walker, 152 carries for 997 yards, 9 touchdowns. Okay?
That's stud.
Phenomenal stats. Heisman caliber stats right now. Corum is our leading rusher right now. 116 carries, 729 yards, and 10 touchdowns. So Corum has almost 40 less carries than Walker does. He is 250 yards behind him. To give you a little perspective, Corum has only broken 120 yards once this year. He had 172 yards early in the season. Okay. He's had multiple 100-yard rushing games, but all of them have been 119, 100, somewhere in there. Walker, to get those stats that high, has had two 230-plus rushing yard games, one against Northwestern to start the year, the other where he broke a big game against Rutgers. So, yes, he is good, but the stats are a little inflated by the fact that he had two very monumental games that got him 500, almost 600 rushing yards in two games.
But he's a great running. But if it turns into a W from that, isn't it worth it?
I mean, you're always going to take that.
I'm not saying that, but I'm saying –
no one's saying it's not worth it.
But what I'm saying is if you look at the stats alone, he wins off of that. But if you dig a little deeper, you see that it's because he had two monumental games, and then he had five other pretty good games. He also had some shutdown games. He had some games where he didn't do anywhere near as much, and you had to rely on the passing game. But – I'm just saying, you take away those two 200-yard games, the best game he had was 170 yards against Miami, which is very good. But then, other than that, he's only broken 100 yards one other time. He's gone for 80, 61, and 57 in three games. He's had three or four really good games. I'm looking more at Haskins and Corum, who have been consistent, maybe not, Big Ten highlight reel, but consistent over 7 weeks. So in that regard, I will take the Michigan running attack because it's kind of the same excuse I'm going to use or reason I'm going to use for the line too. Everyone in the country knows Michigan's running the football, and yet they still do it every time effectively. Michigan State, they know you want to run the football, but they also know that they have to at least honor you guys throwing the football. So for that reason, I'm going to say it's Michigan's rushing attack that gets the win there. Two out of three beats out Jay, so unfortunately you lose the rushing attack. Moving on,
You're good.
That's fine. Another unanimous. I think this one's gonna be unanimous as well. Look, if Bell's playing in this game, I think we have a debate. But Bell's not playing in this game, so when you talk about the receiving core, I think that has to go to Michigan State because look, Naylor stops that argument by himself. Receiving core goes to Michigan State. Yeah.
Yep.
And everybody's gonna agree with that. So now the next one that I think holds the next best debate because it stems right off of what we were just talking about, the offensive lines. Russ, I'll let you go first on this one. The offensive lines, Michigan State's big uglies versus Michigan's.
Oof. So the first thing that comes to mind was Michigan's long no turnover streak that went there. Obviously, we talk a whole lot about the running game, and you can't – I don't care how talented your running backs are. You can't have a good running game if you don't have a good O-line. Both teams have that, though, so it's kind of a wash, just in different ways. So I'm tempted to take the easy way out and call it mostly a wash here with the admission that I don't study the offensive line to be able to pick out the intricacies of who does which one better and which one's running a zone scheme and whatnot. Because I'm too busy watching DeAndre Swift highlights. But yeah, if it's a valid answer, I'll say a wash. If it's not, I'll say a very slight edge to Michigan because they have been a little bit more consistent, I think. When asked to do a singularly focused assignment, they've been able to achieve it without the benefit of uncertainty on the defense's part.
Okay. All right, we're not going to make this a contentious segment either. I'm going Michigan with this. You guys are more effective on third down, and that's been like my prime emphasis is how effective are we on third down. Whenever we've played Big Ten teams, our third down efficiency goes through the toilet and back. It's a clogged toilet, and I hate it. You guys do have that singular approach, and when you're going to run that ball on third and get that short distance, if that's what you're attacking, you're getting it. It's not a problem. For you guys. So on the third down consistency, I'll give it to Michigan. I think they are very similar, but hey, you keep those chains moving, you're gonna win games a lot. So I'll unfortunately give it to Michigan there.
Yeah, like I said, it was my same reasoning for the running back as it is for the big uglies. You know we're running the ball. We might throw the ball every once in a while, but 9 times out of 10, when those defenses are lining up, they're expecting something between the tackles to happen. And for that reason, those five guys, six if you want to add a tight end blocking, have to be perfect every time. Cade, he can get away with maybe stumbling on a handoff as long as he gets it to the back. Corum can get away with, maybe missing a hole once or twice. These linemen every single time have to be perfect because if they aren't, that's how you get second and 11, third and 12. Those kind of things. And they don't do that as often as not. It's very rare for a loss to come because of those offensive linemen. So that being said, I think it has to be them. What Walker is doing for Michigan State, and what that line is doing to give Thorne time to be able to throw the ball is very commendable. It is. But almost like we all said, on talent alone, Walker laps Corum and Haskins in a lot of situations. They're all great backs, but if we're going to all pick a back, we're going to pick Walker first. So a lot of what's happening is talent alone. Corum and Haskins are a very good product of what that line's doing. So I'm going to take the offensive line for Michigan, but believe me when I say it, this one to me was the closest argument of the arguments we're going to have. A lot of the other ones were, to me, a lot more sided one way or the other. And then lastly, because I think it's going to play a big factor here, it'd be way too hard to break down individually, so we're just going to go as a whole. The defenses. The defenses for Michigan and Michigan State.
I was having a panic attack.
It would have been tough. It would have been very tough. No, it would have been way too tough. It's asking so much to break down, and we have other parts of this we want to talk about. So – Actually, before we get to the defense, let's ask, does anybody really want to take a crack at special teams? Does anybody think a special team favors one?
Matt Coughlin is a god, so don't worry about it. I don't need no Jake Moody Booty.
You're pretty much debating Coughlin or Moody right now. So
Moody, top tier name.
Russ is a statue. Yeah.
Top tier name.
Yeah. It's not
Ginger Flow. Ginger Flow.
Ginger Flow. So defenses, as we look at these two defenses, because it really is going to be which defense breaks first, because whichever defense breaks first could be very much the deciding factor in a game where I think would be fortunate to see over 30 pass attempts between two teams combined. So Jay, when you look at this, those defenses, which one is going to bend but not going to break?
I'm going to rely on more likely.
To bend but not break. Okay.
I'm gonna go with State. I understand the comparisons between Hutchinson and Panishuk are there. I guess we don't need to show someone how you can come off the floor holding a dart, a dumbbell, or whatever the hell Hutchinson did earlier in the season that kept being on repeat on TV. Do you guys know what I'm talking about there?
Yes. I don't know that you grasp how difficult of a physical feat that is.
Show me how that puts points on the board. I'm not worried about him standing up holding weight. Congratulations, sir. You work out.
I can tell you exactly how that puts points on the board.
Yeah. Nine. Well, it's my turn to talk, so it doesn't matter. I'm going Michigan State just because if we're going to compare both these defenses going against each other, you have to take into consideration the offenses that they're going up against. We've got the deep ball. I don't think Cade's got that. So I think if we can take our safeties and corners and don't let anyone get behind you because they're not going that far anyways, I'm going with State's D to prevail. I love you, Eric.
I think it's two different questions of who's the better defense versus who has the bigger advantage over the opposing quarterback. Because if it's That's the latter, right. We already answered that question when we all said Thorne was better. Even if they were even – of course, Michigan State's defense is going to have a better advantage over the Michigan quarterback because he's not as good.
All right, so that's fair. So then I'm still going to go State, but you did point out a flaw in my argument there. So thank you.
State, but in Helvetica instead of Ariel.
Thank you.
I'm obviously going the other way. Aiden Hutchinson would be an easy argument to start with. Never mind that he's only tied for first with sacks on the team. Two different players with five sacks. Michigan State's only got one player with five sacks or more. So having two studs on the pass rush does a whole lot more than just having one, because like we mentioned earlier, it gives you some unpredictability, and that unpredictability is king in sports, especially scripted sports where both teams have something they want to do. The one that can mess up the other from not doing what they want to do typically wins a lot more. So having that varied attack is what really helps there. Also helps that Michigan just gives up 4 points per game less than Michigan State does. And the big fault that I see with Michigan State, and it'll come back later when we want to make our predictions, they let teams run up the plays. They don't close out drives like they need to. They average 47 pass attempts against a game. How?
Second team defenses.
And 36 rush attempts. That's an astounding 83 plays that you're letting the opponent be on the field for every single game. How are you not closing out and doing more three and outs? They have the talent to, but that's a fault that I think will ultimately come and bite them back in the butt.
I don't like that. I don't like any of that.
I think to me, it's that thing, because it really is a battle of the front line, because these are two teams that every week are practicing against the best back, some of the best backs in college football. So to me, it's really that whichever front line can get a better grasp of how to attack the running attack for the State or Michigan is going to be the one that wins it. And like Russ said, when you have two guys that are already plus five in sacks this year, and you have a guy like Hutchins coming off the edge, which, by the way, Jay, in case you didn't know, that bar thing is explosiveness to be able to come around the edge. In case
with
you were
balance
curious.
To with utilize balance. All that strength.
Wonderful. So thank you for the Michigan glossy explanation.
It's not at all. Aaron Donald's going to tell you that's exactly what you're supposed to do. It is so you get off the edge. Last thing you want to do, because that weight is the weight you're pushing against a 300-pound lineman. And the last thing you want to do is get one hand on that guy and be trying to come off the edge with him, and that weight's more than you can handle, and you're sitting on the ground.
Yeah, last thing you want to do is be edging and not be able to get off.
That's a problem.
He understands that.
Your success.
He understands that conversation. Look, these are two very good defenses. I'm not going to try to say one way or the other that it's night and day difference. I mean, you look at Michigan State, they had the scare against Western Kentucky. Not really a scare, but more points than you ever want to give. You held every other team to the 20s as I'm scanning through this. So 20 or below, actually. So it's a very good defense. I just feel like that Michigan front line is a little bit better at taking care of the run game. And in that case, then it's on Thorne. You add that pressure. This could be a game where Thorne maybe has a little bit of trouble. So I'm going to give the defense to Michigan, but it's another one of those ones where it's a toss of the coin. Both of these defenses are phenomenal, and I think they're going to play the big factor in who gets the win. So we'll see what comes out of it. We can't stall it any longer. I know everybody wants it, so it is time. It's Battle of the Unbeatens, Michigan, Michigan State, 12 o'clock kick in East Lansing. You can say it either you want. Captain Khaki, Tuck coming, whatever you're feeling, it is what it is. Jay, get out of the way. Give us this astounding Michigan State at home win to get to 8-0.
So you know it's a win, but it's
oh, by the way, I'm sorry. Before I forget, just so everybody understands, Michigan's 56% favorite. Spread is at 4.4. Over under is 50 on the number.
I love being dogs at home. So here's the thing. It's a win. That's the easy part. It's the story of how we get there. And in my mind, when I write the script for this Saturday, this is how it plays out. State has been a dog in the rankings. They're a dog at home in this game. They were a dog against Miami when we went down to Florida. We're a dog in the media. We're a dog on every single bit of coverage. And Michigan somehow was still ranked higher than Michigan State coming into this weekend. Fine. Put all that aside. What's going to happen here is that you guys are going to get uncomfortable in the woodshed. And I know that's so cliche, and you probably just had your stomach turn when I said that, but that's what we're going to do. We are going to come out fast. And if we can get up by at least 14 points and force Harbaugh to do something he hasn't had to do, which is try to make a comeback in the game like that by that many points, and have Cade start slinging the ball maybe more than running it, because time of possession is no longer important. You need to score fast and early now. My goal is to make you guys uncomfortable. I want a 14-0 lead in the first quarter of this game and make Michigan do something that they haven't had to do, and then just coast to a victory. It's got to be fast. We're coming. This is the Tuck coming. Tuck coming in the first quarter. And if we can do that, I'm seeing a 28-17 victory by State. I want you guys to get uncomfortable. You guys have to balance the running game with two running backs, and you have to attack down the field. And you guys, the time of possession, Russ, is a very fair point. I just thought you guys did it more than we did. We do it similarly. That's fine. When we're up by points, you have to move. And I think that's the recipe for us to win, is that we get to have the big play to take the top off this shit, and you guys have to chip and grind and eventually get there, whereas it's just going to take one big play to Jalen Reed or Jalen Naylor or Kenneth Walker, or hell, Peyton Thorne can go out there and catch one again. I mean, I just think we have the big play that's going to open this up for us. So I'm taking the victory, obviously, but that's how we get there.
You got a score?
28-17 State.
Okay.
He had that ready. Forgot to mention it, but had it ready.
28-17.
Interesting that he keeps saying that Michigan State has the big play that they pull out all the time, when we've already referenced it, and I'll say it again. Points per play for these teams are almost identical. 0.54 and 0.53 points per play. They're not living and dying on the big play. They can do it, right? They absolutely can. But if you take that into consideration, that means there's a whole lot of plays doing a whole lot of nothing, which is a concern. But I'm gonna try and scare Michigan fans more effectively than Justin just did. Last 10 meetings of these teams, one team has been ranked every single time, at least one team. Last time both were ranked, hey, the game was also in East Lansing, Michigan won. So, hey, that's cool, at least for us. But 40% of these games have been won by the lower ranked team. That shouldn't happen. I don't care what teams we pick. You pick any two teams, the lower ranked team should not win 4 out of 10 games. All 4 of those lower ranked teams that won were Michigan State. The only upsets that have happened in this rivalry in the last 10 years has been Michigan State beating Michigan. So yes, we're in that position again this year, where you have to go to East Lansing against a team that's ranked lower than you, against a team that's had your number when they've been ranked lower than you. At a 4-point spread, look, I think the 4-point spread is great emotional manipulation, and we saw it on Justin's face right there, because maybe I'm biased because I live in Michigan, but I don't know of any fan base that loves being a home dog more than Michigan State does, and that lathers them up. And being a road favorite for Michigan fans does the exact same thing, because so many of them get to go and look down their nose at Michigan State. And in one fell swoop, setting that line a little higher than it needs to be, they've enticed both fan bases and pissed them off and excited them all at the same time. So it's a beautiful bit of emotional manipulation there. I think it's too high. I think it's closer than that. But hey, we score in intervals of 7 and 3, so things get wonky on the lines there. There haven't been a lot of 4-point matchups between these teams in the last 10 years. I think there was 2, 3, 4 of them were less than 5 points. 1 was less than 3 points. That's it. Because you score in intervals of 3s and 7s. But anyways, I'm going on for too long. I mentioned it earlier, the points per play. Michigan State gives up way more plays and runs fewer plays themselves. So when you produce at the same rate but have less opportunities to do so, you don't produce as much. So as long as Michigan can continue to just be okay, be baseline what Michigan State has allowed in the air, this is a win for Michigan under that principle that you have your production rate, 0.5 points per play, and you get to run more plays. You average that out with what their actual points per play are and what the average points would be, it's 29 to 24 is the expected points. And I've got 28-24 as my prediction of a win there.
One quick thing. This should have been an episode without math. I don't appreciate that shit. Screw last week. This should have been the math-free episode.
You just heard a lot of numbers, so I'm going to try to give you as few as possible. Here we go.
Fair.
This game is going to come down to what happens when, I'm not saying it's going to happen frequently, but what's going to happen when Cade McNamara has to put the ball in the air. It's going to happen eventually. There's no way that we're finishing this game without Cade throwing the ball. So if Cade can be efficient with that ball, I'm not looking for all of a sudden we get a, 250-yard, I'd love a 250-yard, 3-touchdown game from Cade, but I'm being realistic. I need Cade to, with the limited amount of time, we need him to throw the ball to be efficient. If he can go 8 of 12 for 120 you know, 40 yards and a touchdown. I think that's all we're going to need out. You're going to, in this perspective, you're not looking to stop Walker because it's not possible. You're looking to contain him. If you can keep Walker to having one of those less breakout games where he scratches 100 but doesn't, you know, thrash you for three touchdowns and 170 plus yards, this is a key to a win. They, like us, they want Walker to touch that ball as frequently as possible. So got to be effective. That run game has to be there, and I think it will be. We went through all the positions. We agree that it's almost split down the middle. Michigan State's got the upper hand in some spots. Michigan's got the upper hand in some spots. I feel comfortable saying that in some spots where it really matters, Michigan has the edge. So for that reason, it's the same thing. I think that spread's generous. This is going to be a very close football game. Neither of these teams are going to – I don't see either of these teams routing the other. And if they do, it'd be a shocker to me. So I'm saying 27-24 Michigan in East Lansing. It's going to be a slugfest for sure. If you're planning on watching a game that's air raid to air raid, turn the channel because you're not going to get that. You're going to get some kind of what we grew up with, some old school Big Ten between the tackle football with a little razzle dazzle here or there. 27-24, Michigan gets the win to go to 8-0. Michigan State 7-1. But you know what's insane? Even with the loss, whichever team loses, it's still playing for quite a bit. These teams can win out the rest of the way and still be in a very elite conversation at the end of the season. So we'll see what comes out of it. Jay, best of luck this week, buddy. That's all I can say.
I went pretty heavy on the Saturday wager, so we're going to see what happens.
All right, go either way.
Talking about teams that two teams that haven't lost yet, we got to talk about a team that hasn't won yet. Michigan. Or not Michigan. So that was bad. I literally was looking at the Michigan logo on my phone when I said that. Detroit Pistons are sitting at 0-3 right now. Now, granted, number one overall pick, Cade Cunningham, has not stepped on the court yet. It might help if he did. We'll get there in a minute. Right now, Sadiq Bey is our leading scorer, 18 points a game. He's also our leading rebounder at 10 points a game. Assist goes to Joseph, 2.7. What's that?
Oh, Sadiq Bey's tied with assist at 2.72.
Oh, okay. The thing that I'm going to put down as the first red flag, because the question at the title says it all, are we in for another year of good, bad? Yes, I think we are. But the question I'm going to raise, or the point I'm going to raise, is with Cade not playing right now, this was an opportunity for other guys to step up and show that when Cade got back, they were still vital roles. They still had vital roles in this offense or on this team. I don't know about the two of you, but Killian Hayes isn't showing me that. Killian Hayes is sitting here averaging a not so great, if I remember correctly, 4.7 points a game and 2.7 assists. That's not going to get it done if you want to be the other guard in this rotation on this team right now. Because let's be honest, the second he can play, Cade has got that number one guard spot. Hayes had an opportunity to show you can put me on the floor with him and something good's going to happen, and I haven't seen it yet, Russ.
No, the numbers are a little deflated because of how awful his first two games are, but I can't completely discredit them because he had two awful games. And he's played three, right? Mm-hmm. He got 12 points in the third one. He shot 67% from three. So, hey, that's promising. But he still shot 36% from the floor. And that was his best game? No, it's super early. And you played against two playoff teams, at the worst, fringe playoff teams. We're talking about Chicago. But, yeah, he's not – I expected more. I definitely expected more. Three assists. I mean, that's supposed to be his bread and butter. And with Cade coming in, he really would have to push the assist playmaking part of his game. And it's not showing up right now. And that's really troubling for me. Even though it is early and a week from now we could be saying, oh yeah, it was fine.
Well, I mean, a week from now they could be a 500 basketball team. It's not out of the realm of possibility. But for me, it is that fact of it's almost shows, and we've debated it so many times on this show, it shows you how much more important that first-round pick is to a basketball team. Your first-round pick doesn't play right away. It doesn't do anything to you. Same with baseball. But hockey a little different depending on where you draft. But that NBA, those first 20 picks are expected to be contributors day one in the NBA. And it just shows you when you have the number one overall pick and that guy hasn't played yet, what you're dealing with to, because you have to be pretty bad to be in contention to get the number one overall pick. Look, I like what Sadiq Bey is doing. He's stepping up in his moment when he gets the opportunity to be the go-to guy. And look, 18 and 10, you can't ask much more of a guy that's out there averaging a double-double. Like, that's, you can't ask a lot. Now, yes, we're three games in. There's still a long way to go. If he can manage to do it for a season, that's phenomenal. I think Sadiq Bey is in the cornerstone as a, you know, is one of the cornerstones that they want to build around right now. Obviously, Jeremy Grant, Cunningham, they want these guys to be here for years to come. But look, it's 0-3. It's really hard to get hyped up for an 0-3 basketball team, Jay.
It is. I mean, good bad almost lives up to his reputation right now, because I think it's good with Cade, bad without Cade. Like, and I think that's a problem, because like, what if Cade is doing fine now, right? Say that Cade's here and he's here for several weeks, but then he gets hurt in the middle of the season towards the end of the season and we just fall apart without him. Like, that, we can't be that reliant. I think that's why there's super teams in the NBA. That's why teams form up and do things so that there's, you know, no one person has to carry one load. So if everyone's just waiting for Cade to show up and then they're supposed to be better than they're playing now, you should be good now. And then when Cade gets here, you're even better with him. So I know those are just very simple like terms and thoughts, but that's yeah. This team is still bad. So, and we didn't have Grant. And granted, I listened to one game. I listened to one of the three games on the way home driving home. But there was a series where they had five offensive boards, and that's Atlanta. Like, we didn't pull down a single ball from five different shots, and they were just – they took off. So we need to be better without Cade and good with him.
I mean, I guess crystal balling it, Russ, how different does this team actually look when Cade steps on the floor?
Ooh. The sad answer is probably not a lot. Not day one, not week one, not the first half of the season. Look, it's still going to be a bad team regardless. I mean, you could throw Cade on here 100%, right? You know, not injured at all. And maybe you win one more of those games, right? Or one of those three games that you lost, you're still 1-2. Maybe not. I mean, because they were, what is that, a 6-point loss, a 15-point loss, and an 18-point loss. It's still a bad team. It still takes at least 7-8 guys in a regular rotation to win a basketball game. And Cade's not going to come out and play 35 minutes a night right away. And even if he did, he's not – Cade today is not Cade, the number one pick, right? That takes – even in basketball where you get immediate payoffs, it takes a couple years to really get to that prime. It even took LeBron a couple years to really become LeBron.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, no, it's still a bad team, except everyone gets slotted down a little bit, and it makes their lives easier. So maybe Killian looks a little better because he's asked to do less. Other than that, no, it looks a lot of the same. So enjoy the little victories while we can. Enjoy Sadiq Bey.
Yeah. Look, I think it's remarkable how much people expect one person to completely switch it over, but almost like the reference to super teams. It's very hard to name the last time a team won an NBA championship where it was one superstar and a bunch of role players, because it just doesn't happen. There's a reason. Look, back in the, now granted, you have the Chicago Bulls of the 90s that made it tough, but you look back at some of the teams, like literally the second all-time leading scorer in NBA history and the leader in assists were on the same team for their entire careers together and never won a title. Got to finals, never won a title. If you don't have more than one piece, you're not going anywhere, because we've seen what happened. LeBron is so worn out at the end of years from carrying them to the playoffs that he can't sustain it through the playoffs. So he had to team up, and it's not unfair. It's just it looks, I think aesthetically, it looks so much different when you go elsewhere to team up, as opposed to it being built organically, like Golden State, like the Bulls, where they drafted all those guys. The only one they traded for was Rodman, and Rodman was not someone who everybody's like, oh, that's the X factor. He ended up being the X factor, yeah. But no one saw him as that. It was they drafted Jordan. They drafted Pippen. You know, it's the same as Golden State. They drafted Drummond. They drafted Clay. I'm not Draymond. They drafted Draymond. They drafted Clay. They drafted Steph. They went out and got these guys. And so it just looks that much different. But you notice that the teams I'm mentioning, it's not they drafted Jordan and then picked up five schlubs off the street. They had to go out and find people. And that's what they're trying to do right now. That's what Weaver is trying to do in Detroit. So it'll be interesting to see how much longer it takes. I mean, it's going to take a little while, but it'd be interesting to see when the final picture comes together of what they're looking to do. How incremental was Cade and all that? Was Cade just one piece of a few, or was Cade that guy where, like, oh, we got Cade, now we can start building around? Is Sadiq Bey one of those guys? Is Stewart one of those guys? I mean, Stewart's averaging 10 and 9 right now. Not bad, but you want a little bit more out of your center on the boards than 9, but you can't really complain for it. My last question, because I know Justin likes his salty questions that he can kind of give a little bit of an edged answer to. Jay, Cade hasn't played a week. Look, it's a week. That's all there is to it. But I asked Russ 2 weeks ago, if you had to pick of the four top young guys in Detroit to win a rookie of the year, who would it be? And he said Cade. I think that's still a very safe bet. How much more time can Cade afford to miss before Green, Jalen Green just gets to take rookie of the year?
Oh man. Cause now you're looking at stats on you're looking at stats differently. Cause you're looking at a full season for Green compared to Cade for when he comes back. I mean, okay. Go middle of the road. If he misses half of the season, would half of a Cade season top Jalen Green with the Bulls, correct? I think he's on the Bulls, right?
Rockets.
That's no, he's on Houston. He's on Houston.
That's the one.
Just to give you an idea, where he sits, Jalen Green right now is averaging 14 points, 4 rebounds, and 2.5 assists a game. So he's not blowing anything out of the water, but he's the other leading guy right now for Rookie of the Year at averaging 14 points a game, and he's third on the team in scoring behind Wood and Eric Gordon.
I don't know, a month, maybe a month, and then he better show up and just jet fuel his way to those points. When you look at the players, you can probably make an argument for either or, but when you look at the numbers, you've got to have a good basis, and Russ can probably figure that out perfectly. You better have a great understanding of why you deserve to win it with missing X amount of games. So maybe a month. I'll give him a month, but get your ass in the court.
Russ, can he afford to miss much more time than that?
No, I mean, that's about where I was at, right around the 10 game mark, because that's 70 games from now, so I guess 9 more games, because he's gonna get some maintenance days off, right? And you can't, personally, I think if Jalen Green's gonna play a full season, Cade can't play less than 60 games. He can't even get close to 60 games, because already voters are biased to players that score, and that's what Jalen Green does best. He's averaging 14.5 points now. Kid's probably going to get better. He'll probably end the season closer to 18. And if you're not playing at least 60, 70 games, you're not going to accumulate enough other stuff to reason it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I figured if you wanted to do the averages, he probably, I think Green finishes the year probably averaging pretty darn close to 20-8 on season. Feasible. Which isn't bad. And yeah, it's just, look, he's going to get, between now and end of the season, I don't think it's a lot to ask that he gets, 4 to 6 points better a game. I don't see that being a problem at all. He's still figuring out this game. And we are, like I said, we are a week into the NBA season. We're not that far out of it. So I agree, though. I had it as if he's not playing by the end of November, Rookie of the Year becomes a very hard thing for him to do, unless he comes out and just starts averaging 28-10 with his eyes closed. So we'll see what comes out of it. It should be interesting. But going from one rookie that we're very excited to see to a couple rookies that we have gotten to see, and we're pretty excited to see them. I'll read the question, but I'm going to let the question I put as the topic thing kind of say it all. Guys, is it too early to career contract Luke Raymond? Can we just do that right now?
Lock him up.
Is it a little too early to do that?
20-year deal. Here we go.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's a little early.
Entry level.
Put it in perspective. Look, to put it in perspective, again, we're only a couple games in. This is not a big thing, but Lucas Raymond right now sits second on the team in points at 7 points, tied with Dylan Larkin, two behind Tyler Bertuzzi. He's second on the team in goals. Bertuzzi obviously having a 4 point goal or four goal game made it a little tough. Bertuzzi's got 6. Lucas Raymond has 4. But the one I enjoy, and this means a ton to me, Mo Sider tied for number 1 on the team with Dylan Larkin at 5 assists. So these two are both showing up, and they're performing what I could see quite well. I mean, look, Lucas Raymond just had a hat trick the other night, and I sent this to you. The other two guys to do that before turning 20 on the Red Wings, if you've never heard of them, that's fine. But if you've never heard of them, you clearly have never watched a single Red Wings game. Steve Yzerman and Gordie Howe. They're pretty big names here in Detroit. One of them drafted Lucas Raymond. So it ties together. But obviously, I'm joking with the, is it too early to career contract Lucas Raymond? But Jay, when you look at these two guys, Sider and Raymond, I mean, right where you expected it, kind of surpassing expectations. Where do you sit with these two?
All right. So I don't want to bust bubbles, but beginning of the season for the NHL to me is a fallacy. It's a farce in a way. I mean, the Sabres have won a bajillion games. The Leafs have lost a bajillion games. It's upside down land. Am I encouraged with what I'm seeing? Yeah. And do GMs love to see this in entry-level contracts, fully knowing that, hey, I'm not going to pay you another penny until you come out of that deal. And when you come out of that deal, I'll pay you then. Sure. That's the beauty of an entry-level contract. So you want your studs to outperform that. They'll get their money if they can continue to do this 100%. But I typically need to wait another week or two before I start making proclamations on anybody in the NHL. You've got dudes. There's some dude in Calgary. I can't even pronounce his last name. He's on a tear. Magni Piari or something like that. He's on a tear with points.
Mangiapane.
I will never forget that because now it sounds very Italian, like Buca di Beppo. He is on a roll. It's not sustainable. So some of the things that you see early in the year are not sustainable. Do you think the Sabres are going to go? I'm going too far. Give me a week or two, okay? Give me some time, and we'll see if I've got some long-term thoughts. But everything is very short-term for me right now.
Yeah,
Mangiapane.
Okay, that's fair. Russ?
So we've probably seen what the flash of his ceiling can be. To Justin's point, yes, we haven't seen what his sustainable output is because he's not going to go a point per game right now. He's 6 games, 7 points. There's only going to be like 15 guys in the league that even have a shot to do that. But this ceiling is coming sooner than I thought it was, even flashes of it. To do that, yes, the whole hat trick in being one of three in franchise history to do it at 19. Yes, that's an important thing. But more important, I'd argue, is how many other have gotten a shot at 19? How many other have forced their way onto the roster at 19? And that, that way, he is at least a year ahead of where I thought he was going to be. And that's super encouraging. Sider, about what I expected. A few bumps in the preseason, but dude's been solid. I don't even think it's easy to say he's Detroit's best defenseman right now. And he's benefited from some secondary assists, inflating his point total a little bit, but that's what happens when you do good things and don't let the puck go the other way. You get to benefit from good things happening. So he's looking good. I get dreamy thinking about in 5 years when they're both in their prime and there's another, you know, high pick Shane Wright, that joins them on the team. I can't wait.
Getting to Sider, because I agree, Raymond, I think we're seeing out of Raymond what we should expect out of Raymond. Now look, I'm not saying that's 3 goals a night, but I'm saying we're gonna see this is a guy who, when he gets a little more comfortable, we should get used to seeing him find a way to get the puck in the net on a somewhat consistent basis, especially with Larkin, who's looking to facilitate, and Bertuzzi, who I've said numerous times is literally understands his goal is to every so often put a puck in the net, but his goal is really to just get people the hell out of the way so that Larkin and Raymond can put the puck in the net. He understands his role, and I think he executes it well. When it comes to cider, I agree wholeheartedly that I think it says a little more about the players we have around him. But yes, cider is probably the best defenseman on the team right now. That's not a knock on his talent, because I think eventually down the road he'll be the best defenseman on the team just on pure talent, not on the fact that everyone else around him is question marks. But for right now, yes, he stepped up early. The thing I want to ask you both as we talk about cider, what is going to get the bigger roar out of the home fans? The first time he puts one in the net at Little Caesars, or the first time he bounces someone super hard off the boards in action at Little Caesars?
Can I say something? I need to say something.
Uh-oh.
What if he absolutely levels Anthony Mantha tonight? Like, just send him to the moon and he's not coming back.
That's what I was Oh, absolutely. It's kind of what I was more asking, though. What's going to get the bigger applause? When Nick Lindstrom rips one from the blue line, or when he cronwalls someone, to give you the perspective? What is going to drive Little Caesars fans more crazy? Seeing our best hope at a top defenseman do what he does best and stop a guy, or being that guy who we can use on the offense effectively? Because we haven't really had that out of defensemen a lot in the last couple of years.
Right. Yeah. Leading point getter. No goals with a goalie in the net last year. Yeah. Even with that, though, I think it's the hit, just the pulse of the fan base, that'll get more. Just because this fan base has been Justin's favorite player is Luke Glendening, because he's a physical player, right? I'm going to stop trying to tiptoe around this. People fall in love with the physical players in this market. That's not a bad thing, but that is the market. And Mo Sider, the first time that he takes somebody and puts them upside down,
oh my God,
they're going to put it on a billboard on Michigan Ave, both ways, going back and forth. I can't wait. I'm probably the biggest Mantha apologist here, but that's his opportunity. Mm-hmm. If he does it to Anthony Mantha, he'll become governor of Michigan overnight.
Sorry, Whitmer. We love you, but we got to do this.
But I think you said it best, though. There's a reason friend of the show Darren McCarty is so still beloved in Detroit 10 plus years after retiring from the Detroit Red Wings. And look, yes, he won 4 Stanley Cups with them. He has probably one of the most iconic goals in Red Wings history. He's part of the big, like, one of the most memorable fights in Red Wings history. But he's for that reason. He was always physical, wasn't afraid to be physical. And he was exactly what his team needed to be. The guy that clears the lanes so that Sergei Fedorov, Igor Larionov, Brendan Shanahan, Steve Yzerman could do what they did best, and that was score the puck. So, yeah, I don't want to see Sider go one way or the other. I'd love to finally get a defenseman that is legitimately a perfect blend of Cronwall meets Lindstrom, but it's never going to hurt him to go one way or the other. He's going to be beloved either way.
Yeah,
I saw a Wings fan on Twitter. Oh, we're getting choppy. You there, Eric?
I'm here.
All right, one quick thing. This goes to your point of your question. I saw a Wings fan on Twitter already get a picture of Larkin punching Joseph in the face and put it on his wall. It's the physicalities that it is the physicality all day long. It's a shot in the arm, and we need it.
I'm not going to argue with you. I'm 100% not going to argue with you on that. Look, we gave some kind of prediction the other day. Obviously, we're getting to these games before we really saw all of them. I'm doing a little backtracking here to get to the schedule. Look, we talked about the Calgary game, the Montreal game, Chicago. We got Washington tonight. Wings are sitting at 1-2 following those couple games. Kind of, I think everybody was pretty, I think a couple of us were a little more bold than others, but for the most part, where we expected. We got Washington tonight. We got, like we said, we got Mantha. We got Ovechkin. Where do you guys see this one going, Russ?
Oh my God, is it? Do we get a bigger reaction if Mo lays out Mantha or Ovechkin? That's the legend starts.
If I'm being dead honest, though, I don't think you want to hit Alexander Ovechkin. He's kind of big, and he's kind of tough.
Exactly. Exactly. Mo took the puck from Victor Hedman after the whistle just because he could.
Yep.
So Henrik Lundqvist's brother, Joel, I believe his name is known as a tough guy over in the SHL. One of Sider's first games over in the SHL, he went head up at him. And they went back and forth the entire game. He saw the big dog, he wanted the big dog, and he beat him. I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to do the exact. He's not going to be scared to do it to Ovechkin, even though most of us, 99.99% of the population, should very much be. Hold your security blanket tight. But it's... Look, Washington's a better team, even though they're aging, and I'm hanging on to this cider hit thing because I think that might be the highlight of the game. It's still not a good team. I still think it's a loss. I had them going 1-2-2 over that stretch, so hey, I'm close and I'm right on track, so maybe it's an overtime loss here to fulfill my prophecy. But probably less than that, because Washington and Florida are the best teams out of that bunch, and that's still to go. God, and then Toronto, a road. Toronto, Montreal, so Bertuzzi's out for both those games. Good job, only unvaccinated player in the NHL now.
Shot in the arm.
Oh, yep. Yep. It's going to be ugly. Maybe the next six games you get two wins. So let's see Sider lay somebody out. Let's have some fun.
Yes. This is good, bad. Yes.
Jay?
I don't even know. It's a lot of L's, but I'm looking for elbows. So we're gonna go for the bruising. I think I saw something that Washington hasn't lost a game at home this year so far in the short amount of games we played. So look, go after Mantha, make my night. Go after Ovi, make my year. So you just got to look for the physicality. I mean, Florida, they're a damn good team. Toronto, they have to rebound. They got Chicago tonight, so I think they're going to get a win tonight against Chicago. The Habs again, maybe they've got our number this year. You know, right now this is going to make Russ sad. Right now we're 3-3 because we're not doing the third column. We're not 3-2-1. We're 3-3. We're going to rack up
some point. You're higher in the standings because of it.
I knew that would work. We're gonna get some L's, but give me the elbows. Let's go. Let's go tonight. Knock Mantha on his ass.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like we said before the season started. It's almost like the Pistons too. The record to me doesn't mean as much right now because there's young guys on this team. Because for the first time in a long time, unproven people are getting opportunities to prove themselves. So for me, I can live with a box score that says 5-3 loss, but if those three come off of assists from Sider, goals by Zadina and Raymond, Larkin stepping up and being a two-goal guy in a night, I can live with those things because it shows me they're making strides. It shows me that young players that we want on this team for the next decade plus are taking their roles and running with them and being effective, because it means when it is time to win, the moment won't be too big for these guys. They'll have already been there and know what to do to execute in those moments. So yeah, it's the same thing. It's good, bad. They're going to be fun to watch. You're not going to like the end result 9 times out of 10, but they're going to be fun to watch. So look, you're going against, I'll say it, probably one of the most, probably the most gifted goal scorer we have ever seen play.
Hands down.
You can make an argument that what's that, Anthony Mantha? You can make an argument that, you know, that Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, all those guys. The only other guy I think I've ever seen more talented at putting a puck in the net than Alexander Ovechkin is Jaromir Jagr, and he's still playing hockey, so who knows? We could see him again. But overall, we're going to see the most talented goal scorer we've ever seen in our lives tonight, and it's going to be fun to see. So at the end of the day, the box score or the final score doesn't mean anything. You're going to look at that box score and see what these guys are doing. So I'm excited. Should be a good time. It's his favorite time of the week because he gets to talk gambling. Sergeant Salty's bet of the week.
Let's do this. I'm actually going to give you a reason why you would love to see what the box score says. It's going to matter. It's going to matter this week. So recapping last week real quick, I almost feel obligated to give Eric the W. We were one Stafford rushing touchdown away from that parlay hitting. He hit everything else, but we play by fair rules here. No one won a damn thing last week. Everyone took an L. The 8-team parlay died. The 3-team parlay died on Thursday, and the Stafford was so close. I was hoping, but he actually rushed for -1 yards. So thanks, Stafford. I'm going to give you a money line. I'm going to give you a puck line, and I'm going to give you a spread. So this is like hobo pack of bets. You could take either side of any three of the bets. It's whatever you want. Eric's nodding his head, so he's already violating my rules somehow. We'll take two, so you can pick two sides here.
What?
Eric was already I got to pick one, but I'm going to pick two. Eric, he was preemptively saying, how can I break the rules? I want to break it before he breaks it.
I think you're projecting here a little bit.
I'm not breaking the rules here. Eric might break the rules here.
You're probably going to break the rules at some point.
So we're gonna let two picks. Here come the items. Wings versus Caps tonight. Eric, you said a 5-3 box score loss. That would cover the puck line of 1.5 favored by Washington. So Washington's favored. They got to win by 2 to cover it, or you can take the Wings losing by 1. So that's the first option here. Option 2, we talked about our sappy Lions. Spread is 3.5 for Philly. So does Philly cover a 3.5 spread? They got to win by a touchdown or 2 field goals, whatever. The more important one here is the money line. Saturday, Michigan State. Don't worry about the spread. I don't care about the 4.5 points. I saw 4.5 today. I don't care. Make it 20. Whatever. Go away. Money line. Do or nothing. All or nothing. So you got the money line for Michigan State. You got the puck line of 1.5 for Wings and Caps. And you got the Lions as dogs of 3.5 points. So, Eric, you want to break some rules? Go ahead. Go first.
No, I only have one. I only have one.
Oh, you're breaking the rules.
I'm going to go. I'm going to go with the puck line. I that 5-3 sounded really good to me. I think the Caps get us by 2. I don't see that being too much to ask.
And you're really going to just pick one pick. You can pick 2, my friend. I'm encouraging you to pick another one. You can pick State.
I already picked Michigan to win. I already picked Michigan to win. So I'm good. I'm comfortable.
All right.
And so no, I obviously clearly don't think that Philly's – But I also clearly don't think Philly's going to cover because I have the Lions winning. So
respect the bet. Respect the bet. I can go with that. So, Eric, you're taking Caps 1.5 to cover puck line and U of M money line. Russ, what's on your menu?
Well, I need clarification. The Lions bet was only to take Philly?
No, you got to take them to cover 3.5.
I would have to take Philly. I don't have an option to take the Lions plus 3.5, is what you're saying.
No, you can do that. Yeah, you can take the Lions. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I can't believe I'm going to do this.
Oh, my God. I was like, did he just want to ask a question and not follow up with an answer?
Right? Wouldn't that be just hilarious? I won't pick the Lions to win, but I will pick the Lions to have a handicap and win. And in a weird way, indulge that sick part of my brain that can't quit the Lions. I'll take the Lions plus 3.5. It's at home, right? They can still break my heart and lose by 1 or 2 points and I come out ahead. That still works. That's happened plenty.
I can respect that. I can respect that. I also have that, so go ahead. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. I will say puck lines suck though. Huh?
Yeah, like those aren't fun. Those aren't fun.
Yeah. I mean, just thinking about it, if you're down 1, what are the odds that you're just going to get an empty netter at the end anyways? You really only can win on that by doing what Eric did and saying, yeah, the Caps win by 2. Because if they win by 1, they're probably winning by 2 with the empty netter anyways. If the game doesn't get out of hand like it did against Montreal, like it did against Calgary. So
yeah, you have to pray to the empty net gods that it's either helping you or hopefully not hurting you. So are you obviously taking Michigan as well as your money line?
If I have to pick 2, sure.
I said pick two. Those are the rules. You guys are just trying to piss me off.
Eric did nothing but stare at the camera. You buckled, said, oh, pick two. Eric's going to break the rules. Eric then picked one.
You guys are already breaking my preemptive rule break. Great. Got it. So okay. Russ is taking two. If he has a choice or not, he doesn't. He's taking Michigan money line as well.
And this is where we find out Justin already bet on all three of them. So
I did not. I told you I laid heavy on Michigan State early. So I'm going to take Lions plus 3.5 as well. And I'm going to take State on the money line because I did that actually. So that's it, John.
Sergeant Saul, what are the standings right now, Jay?
I'm winning 7-4. Russ is at 5-6. Eric, you're at 4-7. So we're pretty stacked. Last week was unfair. I gave you unrealistic things to actually happen. So
good record.
Very good record. This is winning betting. So I'm enjoying it.
Doing what I can. All right. Well, it's everybody's favorite part of the show. Statman talking about more numbers. Actually, it's no one's favorite part of the show because this isn't a math show, but we're going to do it anyway. Russ, this is easy. This is fun. This is where you get to pull out that abacus. So you ready? Mm-hmm. Here we go. I want to know total, how many rushing yards will there be in the Michigan State matchup this week? Total.
Let's see. What do they normally do here? Five, he says. He just goes five. I can actually, based on what I had to do
Hawaii.
to get that whole thing. Not plus, times. God, now I can't even math.
Please excuse my dear Aunt Sally.
Yes. 259 is how many total rushing yards we get.
All right. 259. Okay.
I can show my work if you'd like, but it involves more numbers. I'm just curious.
I'm doing in my head because the weird thing is you say that and the immediate instinct is to split the middle and be like, okay, so everybody's gonna rush for like 128. I can see it. 100. Yeah. So if I have to ask Jay, he says, hi. He gives you the number 259. You think it's high?
Oh, I was saying hello to you.
Oh,
no, I think he took the over. That's high. That locking in.
He took the over. This is where you get to have that little fun though, because it's rivalry week. 259. Who's got more? Does Sparty outrush Michigan this week?
Got to have the ball to run the ball, and I think you're going to have turnovers. So State.
You know what? Jay, I can knock you out of the episode if you want, but we're going to do it. Russ, show your work.
Thank you. So part of the whole points per play thing that I did earlier is I looked at how many rushes and pass attempts do both teams have and both teams allow. Without boring you into how I weighted them, I balanced them as far as what they try to do versus what their opponents try to do. And average those essentially across each team. The answer would be Michigan is expected to rush the ball about 41 times on Saturday. Michigan State 34.9, let's call it 35. I then took their average rushing yards against, yards per carry, for each team, thinking, hey, it might be in the rain, it might be cold, let's aim low with that one, because hey, the rush four is about 5.5 for both teams, is about 3.5 against. So I used that, multiply your 3.5 or your 2 3.5s against your number of rushes. 259 is how we showed up there. The thing Justin's discounting, though, in taking Michigan State is that if they rush similarly, effectively, Michigan State rushes the ball fewer times. Michigan State's going to throw the ball more than they're going to rush the ball because that's what they've done all year. And we've already talked about Thorne being the better quarterback. So why wouldn't you attack through the air more? They might have a
surprise!
Better yard to carry, but not total yards.
You've got to bet.
You've got to more gambling.
Sometimes you have to look.
You got to bet of the week, everyone. Let me just get that up for you.
Sometimes you have to stare at facts right in the face and say, "Not today." And that's what I'm going to do. Sorry.
I think we've reached that point in the show. You see it on the banner. That's the show. We got to go. My thanks, as always. I'm going to give him his 1 minute to go through it. My thanks, as always, to Tuck Cumming fan, Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus.
Can you say that one more time with a little bit more flavor?
I cannot, because I can't see where your hands are. My thanks, as always, though, to Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus.
Hey, go green. It's finally happening. The biggest game, I think, ever in college football for us here. I think this tops anything. This is the mecca of football. So I cannot wait to do this next week. Go green.
Absolutely, man. It should be a good one. I would like to point out that he literally just looked over the fact that they played Alabama in the college football playoff and put this as the biggest game in their school's history. Russ, Statman, you go by many monikers. Like I said, you always make us sound a lot smarter than we really are. And I'm going to say bye to you in the best way I can think of. Go blue.
It's that simple. Go blue. We'll see you Saturday.
Absolutely, we will. And as always, like we do every week, we'll be back next week to recap it and talk everything. Hopefully we can see a couple wins over the next couple of days. We've got the Lions, got the Pistons, got the Red Wings, and of course, Michigan State, U of M. Like always, go blue. That's one small step for us. One giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcast.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.